How do you two feel about talking about the way in which you work on a scene? I suspect there's some reservation about doing so, is there?
Yes. Oh, wow, it's such
about working together on a scene?
About talking about the process, analysing the scenes or analysing Ravenous or something like that.
I think that that's how any kind of... any kind of relationship develops from a lot of talking. And the first time that we worked together, there was probably more talking than certainly there was in Ravenous.
Oh, yeah.
As time goes by, you have a kind of shorthand that you use with each other. That's why we work with each other as often as we do, because it's very, very easy to know what Antonia requires and Antonia knows what I require. So as time has went by, it's become less and less to talk about.
Yeah.
We don't talk at all in actual practice.
It's true, actually, now we get we'll get to an end of a take in a scene, and whereas normally with an actor, you probably have to say, we need to go again, and you have to really talk about why. With Bobby, he goes, I know.
I know.
but that works. I think that works with actors that you really have built up some trust with and some understanding.
Also, when you're, especially when you know this kind of relationship that you, as an actor, every actor I think has got their own number of takes that they like. You know, some actors like to go all day. You know, on the one scene. And some actors like one take, two takes. I personally like four, and that's all you're getting after that. But it's with this kind of relationship, it's easy because I can say after say three or four, that's the one. I know that, and Antonia trusts me enough to think that that's right.
Does that mean you're best on the fourth?
Absolutely best.
Not always.
Not always. You're
and
balance
that.
There's a few take ones in Ravenous, I have to say.
Oh,
even though we did four.
And since so you're. Yeah, you've worked, of course, in America as well, where there's a different tradition of acting. Do you find that actors there like as few takes as possible or as many takes as possible? Can you generalise on that?
You can't generalise, of course, but there is a whole school of American acting that is about... There's a kind of pride in the number of takes you can do. And one of my first... my first American film was... with an actor who was a young actor who'd worked with a much more illustrious, older, very famous American actor who traditionally does 26, 27, 28 takes. And this younger actor, you know, thought he was crap if he couldn't make it to 26 or 27 or 28. It was torment, total torment, because he was fine at take four, generally, you know.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, and it is difficult, isn't it? I mean, just...
It depends who the director is, doesn't it? You know, I mean, like Ken Loach, for instance, you know, Ken Loach... I've done up to 32 takes with Ken Loach.
Wow.
That's mind-numbing, that. Believe me.
And why does it...
If you say, you know, still water, 35 times, it doesn't mean anything anymore. It's like anything. You say, you know, any word 30 times, you're like, I don't know what I'm talking about anymore. So it depends on the director. I mean, they're looking for something else when they're asking you to go that far.
Yeah.
I think.
So it must be unusual then... for a British actor who's trained to be ready, word perfect, and take one and play around with it slightly, to go with an American actor who thinks, well, we'll start from something and take one and build up. And have you any experience with working with an American actor where you're great at the second take and she or he's only getting going at take 15?
That's a nightmare scenario.
But it happens, doesn't it? I know it happens.
It kind of happens. I mean, I think to be, you know, I have to be honest. I mean, I've worked with a few American actors now, and I was looking forward to that, you know, and coming up in my career, thinking, yeah, I'd like to work with some Americans because they seem to be very, very comfortable with improvisation. But that's certainly not been my experience at all. That they have to have things absolutely set. And I tend to sometimes if it goes past four takes, I start to play around it and change it a wee bit, just to keep it fresh. And if you try that, in my experience, if you try that with American actors, you're in trouble, because they're like, oh, you did.
Yeah. It's serious. But it has to be said quickly that there are American actors who are exceptions to that.
Yeah.
Yes, there are.
Terrific director.
Do you remember the day, though? Oh, I'm not sure if you were in the scene, but there was a classic day on Ravenous where I just got slightly to the end of my tether, because British actors arrive on the set and they have an idea of what they want to do in the scene. They've thought about it, they come and they offer you something as a director. And generally, to get a really good performance out of an actor, you go with that offer, you know, because that's going to be truthful. This person has thought truthfully about what they're doing at this point, and if you can make that work with your cameras and the lighting, all the other hoo-ha that's going on, then you're going to get a great performance. American actors arrive on the set a blank book. Now, that's fine, that's their tradition, but as a British director, it is absolutely terrifying, because you're standing there in 6 foot of snow that's not supposed to be there, with 17 Czech crew having total panic attack because they think they've got to get rid of it, even though I've said in English, you don't, it's fine, we'll work with it. All the other shit that's going on. And you've got actors coming up one by one as they arrive from their costume setting saying, right, what do you want me to do in this scene? It's like such a simple scene. You get on the horse and ride from A to B. You say, stop. You chop wood. You know, that it was. And finally, I just lost my rag one day. I'm sorry, I'll shut up a minute. And I just said, hey, guess what, guys? We're going to do an experiment today. We're going to do this scene like we work in Britain. And they went, great, what are we going to do? And I said, I'm not being practical.
That's clear.
They said, oh, great. I said, you do it. You do what you want to do, and I'll see if I can film it. And they were absolutely flabbergasted by this. And they kind of, oh, okay. And then gradually, you know, we were setting up and getting the camera on its track and doing all the hoo-ha. And gradually, they all kept coming up to me quietly, one by one, saying, yeah, but what do you want me to do? Tell me what you want me to do. And I go, no, I want you to do what you want to do. It's so much more interesting than what I want you to do.
Yeah,
they couldn't deal with it, though.
What do you think is the key scene in this film? Is there a scene which is more important to you in terms of the meaning of the picture than any other?
You asking me?
Both. Robbie first. Robert first.
Well, I think that the sequence just after Knox has been killed, when you know I drag him outside and I'm chopping him up, and you know Hart comes out and messes about with it as well. So I'm standing with Boyd,
yeah,
and I'm talking about Manifest Destiny and Westworld expansion, which is exactly what was going on at that time. 1847, 1848. That's what it was all about. I mean, the US, as it was at that point, was opening up and trying to. I mean, it was even the words in the film, consuming all it can.
Yeah.
We merely follow. And I thought that was very, very relevant to what was happening in Los Angeles even today. And I mean, Antonio comes is going to be talking about this side of it, but you know, the thing about like boys' clubs and belonging, you know, and being part of the gang.
Mm.
That's all in there. I think it's very interesting.
Mm. Antonio,
same scene. But for me, I mean, hilarious, you know, this person had no prep and didn't really know what they were doing. He whispered to me the day we were shooting that film, he said, this is really important, this scene. I thought, And I actually listened to him for the first time, because I had no prep, honestly, it was all instinct. And I listened to him in rehearsal, listened to what he was saying, I thought, fuck, this is the centre of the film.
Mm.
That's when I got the guys out the back getting the old Stars and Stripes sort of thing and wangling it about with a bit of string. Subtle.
Yes,
but but it is my favourite scene. I mean, it gives me a kick. I don't think directors should have power over actors. I think actors should have power over directors. I mean, I'm the reverse from that. I'm doing it to them. You know, what I actually enjoy about my job is working with actors.
Yeah.
More than any other part of the job. And what's frustrating, I mean, I started in theatre where it's a total experience. What's frustrating about the job is that the actor is only there for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, however long the shoot is.
Mm.
And the process of making a film for a director is an 18-month job. You know, it is.
Yeah.
So most of the time you're on your own. There's no actors there. So then I transfer that sort of thing to the music and the musicians probably, that I find the creative people. But
yeah, I mean, I'd sort of step in. I mean, Antonio's really, I mean, the reason why I personally work with Antonio is she's very different from most directors that don't think that way.
Mm.
You know what I mean? There's a lot, I mean, you try, you know, the more you do in your career and the more, you know, success you get and all that, you can pick and choose a little. So it makes it a lot easier. But I've been confronted with the power thing with directors for sure,
mm.
You know, and that's what makes Antonio refreshing because she doesn't have that.
Mm.
You know, it's a collaborative thing, you know, it's a bit trust. You know, and you build up trust through a period of years, and therefore you will do anything for each other in the end.
And it is about listening to each other. I mean, there's a scene in this which I wanted you all to play around the fireplace, and you wanted to play it around the table. And all three actors wanted to play it around the table. I desperately wanted it around the fireplace for all sorts of images that I wanted for the film at that point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole, by this time I had actually got a picture of the film in my head.
Mm.
And they argued like crazy. We were on the set. in a rehearsal situation, because we didn't rehearse before we started shooting, so I had a whole crew waiting outside, waiting off the set to get on. I had a line producer who actually told me, you should not rehearse. You should know this. You don't need to rehearse. Rehearsals are not needed. So I had that shit going on. And we were, and I was listening to these guys, but I was so wanted it around the fireplace. And finally, Bobby, you just went, you want it around the fireplace, don't you? And I went, yes, I do. So, okay, let's do it around the fireplace. Come on. And they all followed him, and it was great. And
that's
it worked.
All right.
Could Antonia say any more about being a woman director in boys' movies?
Well, you know, I said that quite flippantly. I mean, I don't, they are boys' movies, but they're not. You know, there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on for me as a human being. I mean, the films I try to do are about people and situations that touch on our lives in some way. So I'm more interested in the people and the situations they're in than the fact that they're men. But that doesn't sound quite right. But what I think is really interesting about being, about what the question you asked, is that it's almost impossible to get films about women financed. I mean, I would love to be making films with women as strong women as central characters. And I just haven't managed it yet. I'm working on it like crazy. And that's not to do down the films I've done. I'm insanely proud of them. And I don't really think of them as boys' films. I think of them as films about the boys.
That was pish.
That was terrible. What a shit answer.
There's a tiny moment in Ravenous where the only person who hasn't eaten of the flesh, it seems, is the woman who walks out the gate. Was that in the script?
No. That is my proudest moment after the fight.
I didn't know that.
I put that in. I shot it. I had two producers screaming at me when I was trying to shoot that shot, saying, we've got to break for lunch. Go on shooting this shot.
Remember that.
I love that shot. Gives me a kick. I want to do. I'm a popularist. I actually want to make films that millions and millions and millions and millions of people go to see. The difficulty is persuading the marketing people of the various companies that distribute your films that the film is worth spending money on and selling. You know, that's where it's difficult, because I think audiences are much more intelligent than the industry tends to take them for. And I think that people are quite hungry for interesting, edgy films, you know?
Yeah.
There's a lot of good, easy stuff that you can go see and not worry, you know, come out feeling, that was fun or whatever. But I think people would like stuff they could think about as well, and they just don't get a chance to see it, particularly in this country.
Would you appear in the new Bond film?
Well, a number of things. Starting at the top, Michael Apted is director, and Michael Apted, I mean, if you're familiar with him, he has two wonderful films, Coal Miner's Daughter, he did, which is a terrific film, and Gorillas in the Mist, he did several years ago, is another great film. And he also, another hat that he wears, I should say, is a documentary maker, and he started the 7-Up series, 7-Up, 14-Up, 21. So he still does these. He did the most recent one, 42-Up, I think it is. So I thought that Michael would be an interesting man to work with. The part, coupled with that, it's a pretty good villain. You've got to do it. Plus, you know, I mean, again, this is kind of more inside my own head and my own wee feelings for why I took the job. You know, when my dad used to take me to see the James Bond films as a wee boy. And Sean Connery up there. And this, you know, genuinely, Sean Connery, I thought, was the only Scottish actor in the world. You know? And really, he probably was. There wasn't that many as around, you know, at that time. And he spoke like me. And so that, you know, it was always amazing to see Sean Connery. It's like, it's a guy who talks like me. And so that kind of link with Bond and Scots and Sean and all that, me playing a lot of villains in my life, all kind of fitted in. And it was a way for me to experience. I mean, that's the budget in Bond, £75 million. Pounds, you know. It's absolutely unbelievable, the size of it. So I wanted to experience that. I wanted a part of that. And it was a way of me doing that without going to the States and having to do it out there. So it was easy for me to do it more on home shores. That's about it.
Making scenes in Priest were so sensual and sensitively shot. How did they both prepare for that?
So, How did we do it? Well, my memory is it was still only about 5 people in the room, if I remember right.
Less, actually.
Less?
I was a light, a gaffer and a boom swinger. Terrible.
Like the people on trial. It was very, very gentle. And I spoke about this before, I think, but it was very easy because it was a straight guy. Because I mean, you do these scenes with women, very, very difficult. Very difficult because you're like, I always say this, you know, there should be subtitles, you know, underneath it. You should go, I hope you don't think I'm enjoying this. What's coming out here is entirely different. Very, very difficult because you don't know the person. You hope, I hope you don't think I'm getting them laughing this year because I'm seriously not. But with Linus, it was easy because Linus was a straight guy, so he tells me. And so am I. And it was very, very easy then to do that because it was very, I mean, I'm really happy that you say that. It's lovely that you say that, but it was actually quite technical, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. But we were nervous because we were all three of us straight, heteros, and we kind of thought, God, what is our right to do this scene? And so my attitude was, well, that's not what it's about. It's actually about drawing an audience into a relationship and a need that the character has. And why should it be any different, whether they're gay or straight or whoever we are? It's sexual, it's love, it's warmth, it's gentleness, it's all the things I wanted people to see a gay sex scene on the screen and not go, oh, isn't that shocking? You know, to go, oh, isn't that gorgeous? You know, what's wrong with that? It's lovely. I want heteros to think that. That's what I'm saying. So we talked about that, and we just approached it like you would approach any sex scene. And I've done a few in my career.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things to make it easier for actors is to make it very technical. You know, you talk it through, you say, right, the camera's going to start there, by the time it gets to the bedpost, you're going to come, okay? And you do it like that, and then
it's a demeaning job. But
you see what it's done, it's released all of you. Everyone's had a laugh and go, oh, don't be ridiculous, you know. And it kind of makes you feel a bit more comfortable. I also get everybody out of the room, which some people are very unhappy about, obviously because their job is to be in the room. But I think, you know, the fewer people in there as possible, just the absolute essential people. And, you know, talk about it in advance, trust each other.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe when I hear other actors, you know, they talk and stuff, and they say, oh, it's terrible because you turn around and there's 60 people there. I don't think that's ever true.
No.
I wouldn't believe that, would you?
I hope not.
I wouldn't.
But I've heard some really, really, really unpleasant stories from actresses.
Oh, shit, yeah. Actresses get much
stuff that
worse
is absolutely criminal.
Absolutely.
You know, guys are allowed to keep their underpants on, the actresses have to go completely naked. And the crews, of course, are mostly men. You know, I'm nothing against you guys, but it's very difficult enough to take clothes off in front of someone you kind of like that haven't seen them naked before, but isn't it? Oh, I don't know, but it's for me. I'm always terribly nervous. Do you remember that story about Julie Walters, who got everybody in that, what was that movie? Pink was in the title, and women had to go nude, and she insisted the whole crew went nude as well to shoot the scene. And I'm always terrified that the crew are going to do that.
Bye-bye.